All right, think about this. Have you ever, like, totally bombed a test?
Oh, yeah.
Because you relied on something a professor said, like an offhand comment that turned out to be, well, wrong.
Definitely happens all the time.
Now, take that feeling, but ramp up the stakes. Imagine it's not a grade, but your government benefits on the line and the bad info. It came straight from the government itself. Ooh, right.
Yeah, that's rough.
That's exactly the kind of scenario we're diving into today. It all goes back to this super important legal case, Office of Personnel Management v. Richmond, or OPM v. Richmond for short. It really boils down to this question. Can the government be held responsible when its own mistakes end up costing people, like real money? You sent over some really detailed sources on this one. So today, we're going to break it all down.
And what's really interesting here is that this case is way more than just some bureaucratic mess up. OPM v. Richmond is a landmark case in administrative law. We're talking about head-on tackling the idea of equitable estoppel against the government. And even bigger, the constitutional limits on that idea, especially when you look at it through the lens of the Appropriations Clause. It's like a cornerstone case for figuring out where the government's liability ends and how the separation of powers plays into all of that.
Totally. And for all you law students out there, this case, it's like required reading. It hits on so many core legal concepts. I mean, we're talking statutory interpretation, constitutional law, especially Article One, and how it divides up power, administrative law, and the whole idea of what courts can and can't actually do.
Yeah.
When you really understand Richmond, you get this fundamental grasp of how the government works, and maybe even more importantly, how much it can be held accountable for what it does.
Exactly. And that's our mission today. We're going deep into OPM v. Richmond, the facts, the Supreme Court's reasoning, the ripple effects of this decision. But at the core, it's a really human question, you know. What happens when the government gives you bad advice about something as crucial as your benefits? Like, what can you actually do about it?
Right, let's bring it down to earth then. Because in the middle of this massive legal battle, there's the story of a real person, Charles Richmond. He was a Navy welder who was getting a disability annuity. And because he was having trouble with his eyesight, he was trying to be smart, figuring out how much he could earn without jeopardizing those disability benefits he needed.
And that's where the system kind of let him down, right? Mr. Richmond got bad advice. And I'm not talking about just like a casual misunderstanding here. The information he was given, which was based on an outdated law, was apparently given to him both directly by Navy personnel. And get this, it was printed in an official government publication. So you could imagine how much he trusted what he was being told.
Totally. He was just trying to follow the rules, right?
Yeah.
So Mr. Rissman, believing this official-looking but wrong information, ended up going over the legal earnings limit back in 1986. And the result? Well, the Office of Personnel Management, the OPM, denied him 6 months of his benefits. We're talking $3,993. And that's a big deal for anyone, depending on those payments. So, naturally, Mr. Richmond argued that the government shouldn't be allowed to deny him those benefits.
Makes sense.
Because, hey, it was their mistake that led him to overearn in the first place. He said they should be stopped, legally blocked from going back on what they'd led him to believe. This whole personal story really brings to life what could be a pretty abstract legal discussion.
Definitely. And it takes us right to the heart of the legal issue in front of the Supreme Court. Can the government be forced to pay out money that legally it doesn't have to pay? All because one of its employees gave the wrong advice. And to be even more specific, can the doctrine of equitable estoppel actually be used against the government when we're talking about a money claim like this?
Right. And as you know, the Supreme Court's answer was a resounding no. So let's dig into why. The majority opinion, written by Justice Kennedy, really hinges on this foundational American idea that you mentioned before, the Constitution itself.
Absolutely. The court's main reason came down to the Appropriations Clause. That's Article 1, Section 9, Clause 7. Now, basically, this clause says that no money can come out of the U.S. Treasury unless Congress specifically says so in a law. The court saw allowing estoppel in this situation as going against Congress's power over the purse strings, their power to decide how federal money is spent.
Right.
That's a big deal.
Makes sense. It's all about who controls the money. And the court even said money may be paid out only through an appropriation made by law. In other words, the payment of money from the Treasury must be authorized by a statute. So they're saying even if the government messes up, a court can't just order the Treasury to pay unless there's a law specifically allowing that payment.
Right. And this wasn't some brand new idea for the court. They looked back at a major precedent, Federal Crop Inns Corvey & Merrill from 1947. that case set up this pretty hard rule. Men must turn square corners when they deal with the government. So the idea is that people are supposed to know the law, especially when they're dealing with the government, and relying on bad advice doesn't get you off the hook. The court saw Richmond's situation through that lens. He was still bound by the earnings limit, regardless of the wrong info he got.
So basically, the court's saying it's up to the individual to make sure they've got the right information, even if the government itself gave them the wrong info. That seems a bit, I don't know, tough on the individual.
It definitely raises some questions about fairness, and we'll get to that when we talk about the dissent. But the majority opinion also brought up some serious concerns about how this could work in practice. They were worried that if the government could be forced to pay every time someone relied on bad advice, it could lead to, like, a ton of unpredictable costs for taxpayers. I mean, think about how often government employees give out information. If every little mistake could mean a payout.
Yeah, that could get pretty out of control budget-wise.
Exactly. And they also worried that this kind of potential liability might scare government agencies away from giving helpful information at all. They might be too afraid of making a mistake and having to pay up.
So it's a real balancing act, protecting public funds versus making sure people get accurate information from their government.
For sure. And the last big piece of the majority's reasoning was all about the separation of powers. The court was firm on this. It's Congress's job, and only Congress's job, to decide how and when the government spends money. Letting courts order payments based on equitable estoppel without a law to back it up would be like the judiciary stepping on Congress's toes. Justice Kennedy put it plainly. The judiciary cannot vest itself with jurisdiction to grant remedies absent a statutory basis.
Okay, so the majority is saying constitutional principles, past cases, worries about the budget and information flow and the whole separation of powers doctrine. They all point to the idea that equitable estoppel can't be used to force the government to pay money when there's no law authorizing it. But you mentioned there was another side to this.
Right. There was a strong dissenting opinion from Justice Marshall, joined by Justice Brennan. Their focus was on fairness and the government's responsibility to own up to its mistakes. They argue that it's just plain wrong for someone like Mr. Richmond to lose benefits he was entitled to, all because he trusted bad info from the government. Mm. They said the government should be held accountable for the errors of its employees, especially when those errors cost people money, just like any other entity would be.
Yeah, that seems fair. Why didn't that convince the majority?
Well, the dissent addressed that big reliance on the Appropriations Clause head on. Justice Marshall said paying Mr. Richmond wouldn't actually violate the Appropriations Clause. His logic was that Congress had already set aside the money for disability benefits. This case, he argued, wasn't about spending new money that wasn't authorized. It was about making sure the money already allocated for this purpose was given to the right person who was wrongly denied because of a government mistake. He even wrote, "Respect for Congress's purposes and elementary fairness require reading the statute to allow Richmond's claim." So he saw his view as aligning with what Congress intended, not going against it.
So he's saying Congress already decided to fund these benefits. It's just about making sure that money gets to the person it's supposed to go to, who was denied because of the government's error.
Exactly. Yeah. The dissent saw the majority's reading of the Appropriations Clause as way too strict in this case, not really taking into account the government's own part in creating the problem. Oh, and it's worth mentioning, there were also concurring opinions in this case, adding some more nuance to the overall decision.
Really? It's rare to have a totally unanimous decision in these big cases.
Yes. So Justice White, along with Justice Blackmun, wrote a concurrence where they agreed with the majority's conclusion in this specific case about a money claim. But they stressed that this ruling shouldn't be seen as saying estoppel can never be used against the government, just not in cases where it's about getting money from the Treasury.
Okay.
Like, they suggested estoppel might still work if, say, the government gave bad advice about a permit or a license, something that doesn't directly involve paying out money.
So they're leaving the door open a crack for estoppel claims in situations that aren't about the government having a pay up.
Yeah, that's the idea. And Justice Stevens had his own concurrence, where he actually questioned whether the Appropriations Clause was even the right thing to focus on in this case.
Interesting.
He saw the main issue as one of interpreting the law, figuring out the specific rules Congress made for these benefits, rather than a big constitutional roadblock.
Mm.
And he really highlighted how unfair it was for Mr. Richmond, suggesting that the court shouldn't just ignore that.
So even among the justices who agreed on the outcome, there were different reasons and ways of looking at the legal ideas involved.
Absolutely. It shows how complex this stuff is and the different views on balancing constitutional principles with fairness when people are dealing with the government. But let's zoom out a bit. What's the legacy of OPM v. Richmond? Why should law students really care about this case?
Well, I think the most immediate takeaway is that when it comes to federal benefits or any government payments, the actual written law, the statute, that's what matters most.
Yeah.
Advice, even if it seems official, can be wrong. It can't override what the law actually says.
Exactly. This case sets a clear limit on how much courts can use fairness arguments, that idea of equitable estoppel, to make the government pay when Congress hasn't specifically said it has to. You can't basically trick the government into spending money it's not authorized to spend.
And it really drives home that point about Congress controlling the money. OPM v. Richmond is a strong statement about separation of powers. It shows that the courts can't just create new ways for the government to spend money that Congress hasn't approved.
Right. And for anyone studying law, thinking about being a lawyer, this case is a practical lesson. It shows how important it is to always, always check everything against the actual laws and regulations. Never tell a client to just trust what a government employee says, no matter how official it sounds or looks. The written law is king. Like the court said, the Appropriations Clause requires that public funds be spent according to the letter of the judgments reached by Congress, not according to the individual favor of government agents. That's huge for anyone going into law.
So, to sum up our deep dive into OPM v. Richmond, the main point is this. When it comes to federal money, the law is the law. The government usually can't be forced to pay just because someone got bad advice, unless Congress has said it has to. The Appropriations Clause is a big obstacle for those kinds of estoppel claims.
And it leaves you with something to think about. The court's decision definitely put the Constitution and Congress's power over spending first. But does that strict approach end up being unfair to people who rely on information from the government, especially when they're acting in good faith? Is there a way to balance protecting public funds with making the government responsible for its mistakes, especially when those mistakes hurt people financially?
That's a really important question to consider. And if this deep dive sparked your interest, I'd say go deeper into administrative law, the Appropriations Clause, and the whole idea of sovereign immunity. Look up cases that came after OPM v. Richmond and see how courts have used it or set it aside in different situations.
Getting a handle on these complicated legal issues is key for your legal careers. They shape how people interact with their government and what they can do when things go wrong.
For sure. Thanks for joining us for this deep dive. We'll catch you next time.